everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Some interesting thing just got discovered. Fear of snakes. Fear of snakes. Think about fear of snakes. One of the present studies shows preferential activity of neurons in the dorsal lateral pulvinar to images of snakes. So, Freud always thought that if you were afraid of a snake, you're afraid of a penis. That's what he thought. He said snakes represent male gonads. So people who have aversions to snakes have aversions to these things. However, they found monkeys had these aversions as well. And they said that there seems to be a part of the body called the pulvinar nucleus of the thalamus that plays a central role in coordinating attentional effects on visual processing. That means that we have a part of our body that will automatically turn us away from certain things and turn us towards other things. What does that mean? Does that mean that because you have an aversion to something, it means you have a psychological problem? Or does it mean you may have a genetic distaste for it? So that's a question. Think about the things that you fear. I'm curious, what kind of fears do you live with? Not just regular phobias like afraid of going out, you know, fear of being alone. What kind of fears do you have? What are your fears? What are you afraid of? Some people are afraid of the dark. Some people are afraid of mosquitoes. Some people are afraid of spiders. Some people are afraid of peanut butter. They are. They're afraid that if they ate it, it would choke. Some of these fears are based in childhood. Other fears are based in physiological memory. Others are based on some kind of psychological belief system. Like, do you have a fear of pork? You know? Do you have a fear of eating meat on Fridays? So, I would like to know about your fears. That's one of our questions today. And a second question today, because I'm reveling in the fact that I've been able to take your phone calls for the first time in a year directly into the studio. We had, ever since Sandy, we were unable to do it, but now we have a new phone number and a new way of having you dial directly in here. They have one up at BAI, but we like the one that comes into our studio because we could tell when it happens. We could be right with you. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. That's 957-2729. 212. So, question about your fears. Now, here's the second question I have today. One of my friends told me that she has a father. She's a very, very successful woman. And she has a father who comes over to visit. But every time he comes over to visit, he's an elder, as much as an elder is nowadays. He's like 70 years old. He comes over to visit, and he visits, and he stays with the family. No matter what she says to him, he gives her advice. He tells her what to do. What you got to do is this and this and this and this and this. Now, he happens to be from the Orient, from the Far East. So there's a culture there that believes this is the role of the elder. But it goes a little beyond that. This is all he does. Now, when you're a child, you hope. You don't hope, but you get annoyed at people always telling you what to do. It's so annoying. Sit still, wash your hands, pick up your junk. You don't want to do that. Then when you get to be somewhere, as you get to be in your 20s, then your friends start giving you advice, telling you how to live, because you're looking for reasons to live. You're looking for ways to live. What's the best thing to do when your girlfriend breaks up with you? One friend will say, go out and get another girlfriend. The other one will say, let yourself go through the feelings. The third one will say, go get her back. So you listen to the advices, and you listen, hoping that there's going to be something. And if the advice comes from somebody older, you look at how successful the older person is. But these are all advices. So my second question has to do with compulsive advising. That means compulsively giving people lessons. This woman had a task. She was very successful in her life in so many ways. But the one way that she was not successful is she was not able to tell her parents that she doesn't want their advice anymore. She doesn't want to relate to them in that way. She doesn't want them to say to her, you are what you've got to do, and here's your lesson, and this is how you have to bring up your kids. What's even worse is when you're an adult and you have children, and then you have a parent telling you how to bring up your children. That's a horrible thing, because you feel incompetent as it is. You feel like, you know, you don't know what to be doing in the first place. Then you have an adult there telling you what to do. Telephone number 212-957-2729 is our number. And we're going to take calls on both accounts. Why do people have the need to give advice? Why? Why do they have to do it? Why do you have to do it? Why do you feel it's the only thing you could do? There are certain people who feel like their role in life is to gather information. And they gather information from everywhere. They collect information. And they have this enormous amount of information, yet they always seem to be indecisive. These people have the advice for everyone. They tell, this is what you got to do. But they're very unsuccessful in their own personal lives. So when you listen to someone who gives you advice, like, for example, someone who gives you advice about a relationship, how successful is that person with the advice with their own lives? If a person is trying to tell you who to go out with, who not to go out with, how successful are they in their personal lives, in their relationships? If they're telling you how to behave, how to communicate, how successful are they? Are they able to do it? Let's take one of your calls. 212. Oh, where's my flashcard? Two one two nine five seven two seven two nine. Patricia, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Omar. How are you?
Good.
Wonderful. I had an opportunity to meet you at one point. I have fear of flying now because of what happened in 9/11.
You have fear of
flying.
Of flying, because, well, you mean that correlates with 9/11?
Yeah, I haven't flew since that, and I was flying all over the place before that.
And what's your anticipation of what might happen?
I'm more concerned about them closing that door, and I have an anxiety. I have a fear that I'll have an anxiety attack and want to get off at the last minute.
And why would you have an anxiety attack on the airplane?
You have waiting fear on the tarmac for it to take off. You know, just that waiting period.
So there's something about you that has a growing anxiety that is manifested in a fear of being enclosed.
Yeah.
How do you deal with elevators?
And being powerless, you know, someone else is in control.
How about being stuck in elevators? How's that?
I have a problem with elevators, too, yeah.
You do have a problem with elevators, okay.
Oh, yep.
How about closed spaces in general? How about a subway that's filled to capacity?
Now, I was able to deal with that. I don't know why, but I was
You
able
still
to
deal with that. Because now we're looking at a version of fear of flying, or what we call claustrophobia, which is not the fear of Santa Claus, which is what I used to think it was. Claustrophobia, which is being closed in, enclosed. But you don't find it difficult when you can't breathe. That's not the important issue. The important issue is when you can't escape.
Yes.
Right? Okay, Patricia, now take me back a little bit in time. When you were a kid, why was it important to be able to escape? What did you have to run away from?
I had to run away from a lot of things.
Yeah, tell me.
Well, there's a lot of things that were, you know, growing up. There's a lot of things that were happening at home, you know.
The things that were happening at home, which I know you feel reluctant to mention right now, are at the root of your fear of flying. So if you want to take a voyage with me,
okay,
we could take a trip into your childhood. We could talk about some of the horror that was in there that you died to escape from, but you were locked into your house like a person locked into an airplane that's on the tarmac.
Wow. You got it. Yeah, I really did feel pretty closed in.
They were pretty they were pretty crazy, weren't they?
Yeah, pretty stayed to myself most of the time. I was a little child.
Was your dad a drinker?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty insane as a child to see your father drunk.
Yeah, very, very insane to see that. And
would he beat you? Would he beat your mother?
Yep.
So now you're a little child, little Patricia, is at home, stuck, and you had many brothers and sisters, right?
Yes.
How many? Seven?
Well, actually, it was six of us all together.
Six. I'm sorry. I was mistaken badly. Six of you are together, and here are six of you in a home where there's a guy who's beating your mother, and he's drunk, and he's out of control, and you don't know what to do. You're a little kid, and you're saying, let me out of here, let me out of here, let me out of here.
Yeah, well, look out the window.
Look out the window.
Ask God to help.
Yeah.
Help, you know, don't let this happen tonight, don't let this happen tonight.
And God did help.
Look out the window.
God did help because your mind left the window.
Yes.
Your mind left the house.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. It did.
So that's the leftover. This is the leftover from that.
I really didn't think it would have a connection with that.
Yeah.
You know, with the fact that I, you know, I just thought it was, you know, after 9/11, because I used to work in, actually work in the building.
Uh-huh. Which will add to it. But it set off a trigger, and the reason you don't get over it is because it brought up the past. You see? It's because it brought it up. How similar is the feeling of being trapped in an airplane to the feeling of being trapped at home when you were a kid?
Much the same.
Much the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fear of what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
You know, not knowing what's going to happen next. And yeah, you got it.
Well, good for you, Patricia. Good for you. That may be a start. Just that insight alone may be a start to your freedom.
Thank you.
Do you take any boat trips by yourself?
I'm sorry?
Do you take any boat trips by yourself?
Well, that's another thing I have an issue with, because most of the time I want to go on a cruise, you got to fly to the boat.
You got to fly to the boat to get on the cruise.
Most of the time, but I think that's just an excuse, because they do have some places where you can come right from the pier.
I see.
You know what I mean? To go on a cruise.
Boy, you so, and who is it that's taking a cruise? What?
Veronica.
Veronica. You and Veronica should go on a cruise
together. Yes, I remember her.
From last week's show. And I wish Veronica would call and give us her address, because we have donations in her direction.
Yeah.
What a small fry is right. Well,
yes.
Patricia, so are you, and thank you so much for calling in.
Well, thank you. And I just wanted to say suggestion instead of telling someone what to do is better than anything
else. Well, how would you do it?
I have learned, because I do that.
How do you do it? How do you suggest?
I just say, I have a suggestion. You know, it's just a suggestion. You know, you can do, you know, whatever you think you need to do, but it's only a suggestion. Okay.
That's a better word.
Take it or leave it. You know, it's up to you. It's still up to you. I'm just giving you a suggestion. And maybe it's through my experience or whatever it is, but it's usually just something to, you know, for someone to think about.
Well, you know, another way around it,
yeah,
Patricia, is to say, as a consideration, or you might consider. Mm-hmm. You might consider, you know?
Oh, I like that, too.
Yeah, I like that.
You might consider. I'll try that on my daughter.
Yeah, good. Maybe she'll take you on a trip.
Yeah. Well, I knew I was in trouble when she said, I'm going to send you to Hawaii for your birthday.
Oh, my
gosh
almighty.
So that's when I knew I was in trouble.
Boy, you're in more than trouble. You're going to be in heaven. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Is she going to go with you?
Hopefully.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
not.
It. That would be a great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be wonderful.
I just got to be able to get on the boat.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Patricia.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your help.
Sure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-957-2729. So there's one of those cases where a fear becomes associated with a psychological trauma, an effect from childhood. And it happens. By the way, when calling on our number, you have to, I know the call rings indefinitely, and if they disconnect you, just call right back. We've got another person on the phone right now. This is Diane. Hello, Diane.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
All right. I wanted to comment on the giving advice part because I find that a lot in having control over people's lives. I find that a lot in the mental health field and in the recovery field. You know, you have a lot of people. I happen to volunteer in the library and in those fields. And a lot of people will come to me and they will say, you know, I live in this residence and I have to be in by a certain time. And then when they have problems, they try to go to their counselors. The counselors give them so whacked out advice. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, it's according to what you're talking about. Let's start with psychotherapy, for example. Psychotherapy is not about advice. Psychotherapy, the process of it is to help you build your own muscles to make your own choices. That's what it's supposed to do.
Well, that's what it's supposed to do.
That's what it's supposed to do.
That's how it works in the reality. In the world at large, that is not what they're doing.
That's exactly not what they're doing. What they're doing out there is taking the shorter path because people feel empowered to give advice. People want to be considered smart.
And have control over somebody else's life.
Well, I don't even know as much if it's control over their lives. They just want to feel strong. They want to feel like they're powerful. How about you? When you give advice, does it make you feel strong over somebody else's life?
No, actually, it doesn't. You know, I try to go along with the person to, you know, walk with them down that path, but I certainly don't want to, you know, drag them down the path that I want them to go down. And that's what I find is a lot in those fields.
In those fields. Now, have people ever done that to you?
Yes, they have. They've tried. I fight them.
Tell me the worst case scenario. The worst case that you went through.
Oh, my goodness. There are quite a number. And actually, I think I blocked out some of the worst ones.
All right, give me a second worst one.
That someone has done something.
Where somebody gave you advice and guided you down a path and got annoyed with you because you didn't follow their path.
Oh, you know, my mind is not...
Okay, how about your parents?
Oh, actually, I had a stepfather that...
That's the guy I'm looking for.
But actually, he wasn't a terrible guy because I was a what is that? I was born out of wedlock. And the stepfather was the husband of my mother, but they broke up. And then I was born. So I'm... It's actually not his fault. I've actually forgiven him for a lot of the problems that we had when I was a child. Because I realized that tough situation that he was in. I mean, we battled. We fought. I mean, fist fought. But my mother was never around when we did it.
Why wasn't she around?
She was doing other things. No, it was maybe she had gone to the store or
so you and your stepfather would duke it out over issues.
Yeah, and it would be finished by the time my mom got back. So
that sounds like so much fun. It almost sounds like fun.
I don't even know if my mom ever realized that we had that much of a conflict.
So think about this. Think about a mother who doesn't know that this is taking place while she goes out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what an odd thing.
Well, not necessarily. Not if that. The way it was planned by one of the parties.
Right, so to you, this is the way life is.
Yeah.
And life is this way, and you run into this in other places too, where you have conflicts with people that other people don't even know about.
I have conflicts with authoritative figures who make advice, who give advice, or who try to control other people's lives simply because they are in that position of authority, not because they're right. In fact, a lot of times, They know they're not right. They know they're not ethical or moral or whatever.
So, Diane, for the third time you mentioned control somebody else's life. Mm-hmm. How would somebody control your life? What would we do to you? Would we turn you into a puppet? What would we do? How could I control your life by giving you advice? How does someone do that to you? What part of you is so powerless that it could be run by somebody else?
I wish I could give you an example. And in the mental health field, there are so many examples. And even with my own life, but for some reason, I cannot.
At the moment, you go blank, right?
I go completely blank.
Now, have you known yourself to go completely blank at other place, times in life?
I have.
Yeah, it's a safe place for you, right?
It is.
And
it
it's
is.
A place that you go, who is
it? It enables me to move in, to go on.
It's like what Patricia was saying when she would look out the window, you know, when she was having conflict in the house. She would blank out. Mm-hmm. So there's a place in you that when it gets threatened.
Because I forget an awful lot. And I think it has a lot more. I have multiple sclerosis, so the doctors actually attribute it to the multiple sclerosis and other things. But it's a deeply psychological.
Well, with multiple sclerosis, I mean, do you feel at the mercy of other people?
I don't have it. I use a cane, but I don't really feel, because I'm not in a wheelchair, and a lot of people...
So you feel very independent.
Yes, I do.
And you want to be independent.
Yes.
Much more independent than you were when you were a kid.
Yeah, I'm fiercely an independent thinker, which is a threat to the community, because I also have a mental health issue. And it's a threat, because I don't have hardly any education. I barely have a high school diploma. So in the minds of a lot of people in the field, someone with a high school diploma who does not have a position of authority, in actuality, in their mind, is not even supposed to have a mind.
That's what you'd think, you know? But you know I don't think that way, right?
I know you don't. You know, I wish one day that I can meet. One of these days, I'll be able to, you know, save up that money for us to actually meet, because I would love to talk to
you. Well, you can make me a bowl of soup and come by and greet me for 5 minutes. I'm on
57th Street. That sounds like a lovely store.
Yeah, really. Really, we're very receptive here.
One of these days, I may take you up on that. Don't be surprised if I will.
Diane, you're a beautiful lady. Thank you for calling us.
Thank you so much. You
sure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's difficult. It's difficult because sometimes you feel haunted by yourself. Sometimes you can't figure out what it is that's creating the conflict that it creates with people. You know, time for a brief call. Good. But people sure are ready to challenge themselves, especially the WBAI people. It's a beautiful thing. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Jane? Hello, Jane.
Talking about snakes, and it reminded me of something in my life.
Tell me.
That when I was a little girl, I taught myself to be afraid of snakes, because the big girls were afraid of snakes.
Wow, that's interesting.
And I started, you know, I would scream when I saw it. And then it really happened. I really became afraid of snakes. Later on, when I was a school teacher and took my class to, where the animals are, I can't say.
Yeah, the animal place, yes.
Yeah. And there was a snake house, and I forced myself to not let the children know I was afraid, because I didn't want them to get that idea. And then I slowly overcame my fear of snakes.
Jane, how sensitive of you to care so much about children.
Well,
you really loved your work, didn't you?
Pardon?
You really loved your work, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did. I did.
So you worked with children. This was a class when you were a class teacher?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's go back to the fear of snakes and the other girls. You were so wanting to be accepted by the older girls. It was important to you. You were looking for the family of sisters, of older girls. And
yes.
So you imitated this fear.
Yes. And it worked.
And it worked because now they were all afraid of snakes, too. Where did you grow up?
Well, this was when I lived in Spokane. And we used to walk out in all kind of slightly desert-ish country. It wasn't deep woods. But in those days, you could go wherever you want. So we used to walk out in this.
Jane, do you miss Spokane?
No, I miss Seattle.
You miss Seattle?
Yes.
And do you miss your family?
Well, I really don't have much family.
I know. What happened to them?
Well, we just were a small family to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
My younger brother is deceased. My older brother is in California.
Mm.
So.
How does that feel?
Well, I'd like to see him, but I don't.
Why not?
Like taking, I'm not able to fly out there now.
How about talking to him?
Oh, yes, we do talk on the phone a lot, which is very, very pleasing to me because my brother calls me.
That's a wonderful thing.
And he's my older brother, so people...
What's his name?
I guess sisters always admire their older brother.
What's your brother's name?
His name is Benjamin.
If Benjamin could hear you now, across the airwaves, right? If somehow it just filtered down into his brain, what would you say to him?
Oh, goodness, I'd say, I admire you. I've always admired you so much. When we were children, he was slightly remote. Because
mm-hmm.
he was not that much older, but he was older. But then, you know, for many years...
So what would you say to him? Don't talk about him.
At all.
What would you say to him right now? We have about 30 seconds.
Oh, I'd just say I appreciate so much your calling and being in touch with me.
Hmm.
It means so much to me.
You are my family.
Yes.
Nice to talk to you, Jane. We have to be going and take a short break.
Okay.
And
thank you. It was fun to call
it's
you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the lesson.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, so here's a... And this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI. Oh, we heard that echo again. Hey, there we are. Back with you with The Positive Mind, we have on the phone Lisa. Let's take Lisa. Hi there, Lisa. You're on the air. Oops. Nope, you can't take Lisa unless I do that. Hello, Lisa. You're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Armand.
Oh, good afternoon, Lisa.
So nice to talk to you. I've been listening, and my what I need to talk about is not on your topic about people giving advice. Maybe advice is involved in there as well, in fear of snakes. I'm afraid of anything that crawls like that. But what I need to talk to you about right now, my heart is so broken. I just was involved in a relationship, someone I met online through one of these online things. And I thought we fell in love, and I trusted him implicitly. And he stopped talking to me since October 10th. Not a word, would not answer my calls. You know, I was expecting him to come for the weekend. He didn't show up, and he never called me to say why. And I called and texted, and he never mm-hmm. responded. But this past weekend, I asked him to return.
Do you have the radio on in the background, please?
Let me see if I can.
Thank you. Could you turn that off?
Off. Okay. And anyway, so he said he would return the keys. And he texted me last night and implicated that he was going to bring them, you know, because I asked what time, and he said before 1 o'clock. And at about 11:30, I got a ring at the door, and it was the mailman delivering the keys.
Wow, that must have really broke your heart.
It really was a punch in the gut. And no word from him, you know, so... It's just been so painful. I thought of all the nice things he did, and I thought of the bad things he did. You know, he's the person who would shut down when he was angry. He wouldn't speak to me for a day or two. And, you know, so that was his pattern, and I thought this was it since October 10th, but it's gone on so long.
Yeah, you know, Lisa, it's very, very difficult when you have somebody who is mentally handicapped. By that, I mean somebody who shows you signs that they're not all on board, you know, when they disappear at times and they do these things, but you ignore those things because you're getting the goodies out of the relationship. Yeah. And something happened, something got uncovered. Mm-hmm. Something happened in his life separate from you, mm-hmm. and it puts him in a place where he doesn't have the respect, even the respect to show someone he loved truth.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, it kind of reduces his humanity,
yes,
to being like a snake.
Yes.
And you hate things that crawl.
Yes, I do. I do.
Why do you hate things that crawl?
I don't know. I just was always, as a child, I was afraid of. I'm from the islands, and we used to shell the peas, and some of the peas, the pods would have little worms, and. The kids, my stepmother and the kids around knew I was afraid, and they would throw them at me, you know, and I'd run in the street. I almost got hit by a car running to find my father to help me because I was so afraid, and they knew it, and they would throw them at me. But this guy...
Now, wait.
Hmm?
Wait, go back.
Go back.
So when you were a child...
Yes.
You had this, probably this thing that I was reading about a little earlier, this physiological aversion to crawly things, right, which comes from the pulvinar nucleus, but nobody knows this, of the thalamus, and just one kid is more afraid of worms and snakes than all the other kids. But you live in a world where people want to torture you. You lived in a world of kids who wanted to hurt you, number one. Number two, you felt very close to your father, and you needed your father for your safety in the world. And number three, you almost got killed looking for your father.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just like the relationship you have now.
Mm-hmm.
You feel desperate for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for your love.
Yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts so bad, right? It's like it breaks your chest open. Yeah, Lisa.
Yeah. That day I prepared, he was supposed to come for the weekend, and I prepared everything that he liked, and I waited, and he didn't come.
Yeah.
Didn't call.
Now, I know it sounds kind of strange for me to ask it, but do you remember times that you waited for your father also?
Not vaguely, because I was a little kid. You know, he would come home at night late from, yeah, I guess I did, because he would bring goodies, you know, for me. Especially.
He made you feel so good, your daddy, when he brought you goodies.
Yeah.
And you waited for him.
Yes.
And October 10th was another one of those days, waiting for it to happen.
Oh.
And this time it didn't happen.
And today again, here he texted me last night late that, you know, we were back and forth, you know.
And the messenger sending the keys.
What am I doing on Wednesday? And I said, you know, I would be here waiting. My physical therapist is coming at 11:30, and he would be gone at 12. And, you know, I said...
Lisa, there's only one choice here. Either you're going to get depressed, or you're going to get angry.
Yeah.
This is the only choice.
Mm-hmm.
Either you're angry or you're depressed. Now, in this particular case, you have been handled badly by somebody who has a habit of handling people badly by disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
See? So he does that. And the part of that doing that is called passive-aggressive. And part of the purpose of being passive-aggressive is so that nobody could get angry at you. You could break the rule. Now, if you were angry at him and you let yourself feel the angry, what would you say?
I would tell him that, God, there's so much I would want to say.
Right, it's amazing, right, how much there is? Start with one thing. Start with the words, I'm angry at you.
I'm really angry at you because...
Go ahead.
You're just so cruel, you know, so unkind, and why do you have this need to punish?
Don't ask him any questions. I feel angry at you because you're cruel and you're unkind and you punish me.
Yes.
Go ahead. What else are you angry about?
I'm angry that he misled me.
That you misled me. Talk to him directly.
Yeah, you misled me. You hooked me in by doing nice things that would hook a person in. You tell me you love me, you loved me right away.
I'm angry you lied to me about love.
You lied. You're incapable. You abused me. It's abusive.
And I'm angry at you because of that.
You stole my trust.
He probably took some money from you, too.
Yes.
He did, right?
Not in so many ways, like paying for gas, you know, because he's in another state coming to me. You know, so it's...
So you would pay for the gas for him to be in another state to come to you?
Oh, not all the time. You know, like once in a while, like he would go, we'd go to a restaurant or a play, he paid. So he was saying, you know, it's quite expensive coming, paying the tolls and the gas to come so far. And I said, well, you knew where I was when you selected me on
this. That's right, so I'm angry at you.
You knew my religion. I keep Sabbath. I don't answer the phone on Saturday. So you knew everything, you know, and he said, well, nothing beats a failure but a try.
Lisa, you know, I know Lisa is not your real name, but yes. I'm going to call you Lisa. Lisa, you sound so much better being able to feel the anger and say the anger. Do you hear the difference in your energy?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And talking about advice, I have two friends who are therapists, and they've said, Well, good riddance. Don't talk to him again, you know, but it's...
Nah, you can't do that. You know you.
Here, I wanted to hear him tell me why.
Sure.
I wanted to know why. Man, you know, I was saying, what did I do to you?
Yeah, you're supposed to get hung up on that. That's not the answer that's ever going to make a difference to you, because what he would say to you is something that wouldn't be the truth anyway.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes. This is somebody who was given up for adoption by his mom. His aunt raised him. His father was across the street. He thought his siblings were his cousins. He never realized that was...
Well, he never knew reality.
Never knew reality.
And he still doesn't know it now. Lisa, I want to thank you very much. We have to be going.
Armand, God bless you.
Same to you, Lisa.
Bye.
212-957-2729. What hearts? What hearts? So there it is, you see? There it is right there, the amount of love that a person could feel. And now we have this question about the anger versus the depression. It's always quite an interesting thing. When you deal with some kind of a situation, it's either you're going to be angry or you're going to be depressed. Depression usually means you're angry, but you're afraid or reluctant to feel it. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Oops. Hello, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Patty?
I'm right now.
Patty, turn down your radio. What? What is she doing?
I'm coming. Please hold on. Thank you. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Patty.
Oh, hi. Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I have a real problem. Or at least for me, it's definitely a real problem. I'm a blind person. And I have an older sister. She's 62 and I'm 59. There were many, many instances of this kind of thing, but just this weekend, I graduated with a new guide dog. And I haven't been calling her because I've just been way too busy learning and growing, and I've been very, very happy, and she's downright, well, I'll tell you some of the call and you'll understand. I picked up the phone after graduation. I'm happy as a lark. And I said, hello? And she said, why haven't you called me? I left a message there at your school. With that kind of attitude, I said, oh, Linda, I've been so busy. I haven't called anybody.
Wait a minute, Patty. You know, it gets very hard for me within the short spans of time that I have to do a dialogue where I have to hear the words she said and the words you said and the words she said and the word you said.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's very hard to hear. What is bothering you so much?
She wants to have power over me. And I am trying to fight it.
Okay, you feel vulnerable.
Yes.
To your sister.
Yes.
Because she has a certain power over you that you need something from her. What do you need from her?
She controls some of my finance.
So you need your sister to keep you going financially.
But I don't know. She's not paying for me. There's an amount that is mine, but she made me promise I wouldn't go for it.
Okay. And was that a wise choice on her part?
No.
So you want freedom from that responsibility?
Yes.
And you're angry about the fact that she believes she plays that?
Yes.
Okay, so how could you get that cleared up?
Well, the only way I know for real is to go there, to that city. I have a friend there, and I could transfer it somewhere, maybe another state or something.
There's no way to talk to her about this in a direct way.
No way.
Huh. Why would she be so unreasonable?
She loves you. You know why? I can tell you exactly why. She took care of my mother when my mother was in a home. She needed to go to a living facility. And my sister is absolutely certain that she's going to have to take care of me.
I see. So she feels responsible for you. Did you put all that on the table? Have you two ever talked about that directly?
Yes, I've told her, there's no way that you're going to be taking care of me. I live here, and there's no way that you're going to come up here and take me out of here. She's threatened that, at one time she threatened me that she was going to come when I was older, and take me back to my hometown.
Patty, it sounds to me like you know the solution. You know how to deal with it. You can deal with it. Takes a little action on your part, but you sound empowered, and it sounds like there's something between you and your sister that you're not getting right.
We'll never have it right, because she's perfect, and she says she's perfect. She's also very much racist. I have a black gentleman as my significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And she also is just, she's always been resentful and jealous, I think.
So there you have it.
And she's a controlling personality.
So there you have it. I mean, so you've got to let it go and get separated from it in some way.
Yeah, I told her this week that I was still at Guiding Eyes, in fact, because I didn't want her bothering me because I'm still training here at home.
I got you, Patty. Well, listen, it sounds like you do have a direct path for how to deal with this. I would love you to move ahead with it in some way, because you don't want to be under control of somebody who dislikes you so much.
That's absolutely true.
And thank you for calling in.
Thank you, and thank you for your advice.
Sure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's interesting. That sounded like my advice. That sounded like my advice, and it was her advice. That's, I think, the best kind of advice. When someone gives you the advice that they want. But that's not easy to do. It's not an easy thing to do. Because very often people, they have solutions, but they have solutions they've been taught. And they can't, they say, I know what I should do, so on and so forth. I know what I should do is what they say. 212-957-2729, our lines just got open again. That's nice. 212-957-2729. So people will give you advice, but then they will, they'll tell you this is what they think they should do. I know I should drop them. I know I should do this. I know I should do that. And very often, it's not the right idea. But But that's not for you to determine. You know, the only thing you need to determine is to look at somebody when they are giving you advice and to say to them, you know, I know you feel powerless in this situation, so let's go back to the woman who had a father who has to give her advice every weekend, right? And every weekend he says to her, I want you to get remarried, I want you to do this, I want you to move, I want you to get new furniture. And he does this over and over again. What she needs to say to him is, Dad, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to stop giving me any advice or any lessons. Number one. Number two, I know you feel powerless to help me. And if you feel powerless to help me, don't let it come out in your giving advice. What I need is I need your loving support and presence, but stop giving me lessons, please. Could you do that for me for 1 month? Try that out. You'd be amazed also if you're a parent who has children, what it's like not to instruct your child to do anything for a day. It's almost impossible. Let's say you have 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds running around. What would it be like to tell nobody anything to do for a day? Do you think they would wreck the house? Do you think they would blow it up? It's a very interesting challenge. You get so used to doing it that you become one of those parents who just do it automatically. And then you do it with people around you. Then you do it at work. Then you do it in different places. You start telling everybody what to do. Yeah. Yeah. So see what it's like for one day to give no advice, no lessons to anybody, even if you're a parent. Hey, Paul, you're on the line. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, I am.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, hi, Armand.
Hi there.
It's going closed. Okay, it's going closed now. Thank you.
Good. What's going closed?
Oh, sorry. The radio. Armand, I was wondering, I would have liked to point out that, true, I understand your wider top point on the topic today about advice. I also agree with that. A lot of people in the single community, in the dating community, are always giving advice. And, you know, their lives seem to be not very, especially separated people, and their lives don't seem to be together. But I was thinking, you know, it's kind of like that, advice. Oh, it's kind of like that leader thing. You can't be a good leader if you're not a good follower. I never agreed with that. I don't think that's really a great.
What do people advise you to do, Paul? What are people always telling you to do?
You're starting already, huh?
I start. This is what I do.
I know. Fine. I was trying to get to some deeper points, though, here.
But what is it that people are telling you to do?
I'm not financially successful. You said about their lives are usually not really a great. I mean, you were intimated their lives are not really a great example. Well, I'm not financially successful at all. I'm not business-wise successful at all. I've had my failures in all the major areas, but I feel that I've learned a great deal. But just because somebody doesn't have the wherewithal or not in the position of, doesn't mean they don't have a lot of great advice about a subject, though, don't you think?
Right.
That's all my point was.
But the advice that you have to give is a compensation for your feeling of inadequacy. You see, you don't feel good about the fact that you can't get your bucks together. Right? You wish you could have gotten your dollars together. You've tried many different ventures.
It's a reflection of, yeah, where you are now, sure.
Sure, and so
where I am now, yeah, or where a person is, I can understand that.
So most of the creative people I have ever met in my life have this feeling. I can't make it, 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 I can't get there, you know? And they feel this sense of inadequacy behind it. And then what they do is they become advisors to the world.
Well, I know that. I know that. I'm very careful about doing that lately, and probably because of the years I listen to you too, but also in general, absorbing, you know, reasonable personality ideas that it's not good. It's good to lead by example. I agree with you.
Paul, you sound like a very sensitive, and a good man. You know, you sound like somebody who's very sensitive and good, but that you feel a little beaten down, especially in comparison to some of your other friends.
Sure. I haven't succeeded at many, at all the major areas, but I just feel I have so much to give, I just can't find an outlet.
So you don't know where to put it, you know?
No, I don't know where, and starting when you're mature, over again, it's another layer of problem, you know?
Well, let me ask you this, Paul. Have you started with volunteer work?
I've been talking to people about that, and I've been trying to get my mind into that. I'm just not there yet.
Because from where I am, it becomes the starting point for so many people who have your history. Because as they volunteer, as they go into a volunteer place, something happens. It turns you around.
Mm-hmm.
You might consider it.
I did some help industry groups, you know, for voluntary groups with different subjects. That was okay. It's good to get out, you know, and mingle with their ideas. But then after a while, groups just become listening to other people's problems.
And do you find that romance is put away by the fact that you can't find this success in your life?
Oh, sure. Years and years of it's been shelved and chained, you know, pushed around and put on the back burner. Like that woman before me, perhaps a little bit. I have been, though, doing a lot of talking and a lot of plan making with people online. But that's it's sad these days because that's a very cold, it's a very cold world. It's
the
so
online
hard.
The online world is, but you know the world out there is not.
Yeah.
You know, the walking down the street is not as cold as the online world. You know, you get a chance to meet people in a normal kind of way.
You got to get out, right?
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to get out, but you might get out. And I understand that you feel a little beaten, and there's nobody to hold you right now.
No, I want to mix it. It's very important to get out and force yourself to do that. I'm trying to find a purpose in life because in last year and a half, I had the worst family tragedy I've ever had.
Oh, what was that?
I knew you were, of course, you were going to ask. I'm alone now. I'm by myself.
And who died?
Mom.
Your mother died.
Yeah.
That's the biggest loss of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that goes right through your soul, doesn't it? Even as you say it right now.
Well, it has, and I'm trying to struggle with, and people say, you know, there's been, you know, after you get through your phases, people say, well, it's time to find a new goal. And I say, oh, no, that's never been.
Yeah.
That was always my goal, to save her. God bless her.
Wherever she is, huh? Hey, Mom, wherever you are.
She is, you know. If I could raise you one soup for 5 minutes and say maybe a sandwich for 20 minutes, that's about the best I could offer. But
I could take the soup.
Yeah.
I could take the soup. Give a call.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you, Paul.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
It was good to talk to you.
Right.
Bye. Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to have to be going back with you on Tuesday. Listen, I'd like to get some feedback on this format. I'm doing mostly phone calls just because I've missed the phone calls so much. We have lots of material to bring you as well, but would you send some emails or response to our Facebook that would say how you like hearing as many callers on the line? I used to mix it up. It would be half and half. Now we're doing mostly callers because the callers just seem to be a good example of how you could deal with people better. Send an email to armand@thepositivemind.com.
Can't give you anything but love. Oh, baby, ooh. That's the only thing I've plenty of. Oh, baby, dream of wild, scheme of wild, wish your divine baby's happiness. And I guess that's Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby, baby. Diamond bracelets, Woolworth doesn't sell, my pretty baby butter. Till that lucky day, oh, the lucky day, you know darn well, oh, babe, I can't give you anything but love.
Of Black Panther William Potts and found in Germany 1,500 artworks saved from the Nazis. That's later on FSN Reports.
At 6 p.m. here on WB.